You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Welcome one and all to Monday Football Monday here on the SB Nation NFL Show. Today is January 29th, 2024, and Super Bowl 58 is officially set. RIP to the color conspiracy theory. Long live the Taylor Swift stands. We have a lot to get into here on the SB Nation NFL Show presented by DraftKings Fantasy Sports. Check out what DraftKings has to offer this season with code SBNFL, because life is more fun when you are in on the action. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void or prohibited, see DraftKings.com for details. As noted, this is Monday Football Monday. What a big shock. We are here on a Monday. Make sure to subscribe to the SB Nation NFL Show wherever you get your podcast. That's Apple devices, Spotify, et cetera, the way Willy Wonka read the fine print in the contract at the very end to Charlie and Uncle Joe. You can also watch us on the SB Nation NFL YouTube channel. I say us. The incredibly sad Rachelle Privette is here behind the scenes. She will surely show her face at one point because she is not a coward. My name is RJ Ochoa from Blogging the Boys, and with me from SBNation.com, having spent many an hour writing things that definitely did not age poorly, they are JP Acosta and Mark Schofield. Marky Mark, congratulations on writing something that lives forever relative to Super Bowl rematches and matchups.
This is not how you wanted to start this show, my friend. I mean, what RJ is talking about,
I feel great.
I wrote like 3,000, 4,000 words Sunday morning on regular season games that ended up being the Super Bowl that year, because we were going to get, right? We would get three of these potential Super Bowl matches were regular season repeat, right? You could have had, you know, Chiefs-Lions from week one, which would have been a great way to sort of recap the season, right? You have the first game of the season, the last game of the season. That would have been fantastic. You could have had Ravens.
Didn't happen.
You could have Ravens-Lions. All the would have been regular season
Didn't
matches.
Happen.
No, we get Chiefs-49ers.
JP, what it sounds like to me is Mark is mad at something new. The, you know, infamous Barney Stinson once said that new is always better, and we have the new thing, and Mark is, you know, getting off in my ing lawning.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen this matchup since last year in the regular season, and these two teams were completely different at that point.
The birth Jimmy of the Brock G, Purdy era.
Jimmy
that was G, this game.
Yeah, Brock Purdy became the starting quarterback when Jimmy G got hurt in that game, or that was the first game. That was also the first game that Christian McCaffrey played as a 49er. These two teams are completely different. So I understand, like, oh, this is just a rematch of 2019. These teams are two completely different monsters than what they were in 2019. I think that's what's going to make this matchup really fun.
You know what? I understand Rachelle being sad. Rachelle, why don't you join us very quickly? The Baltimore Ravens lost the AFC Championship game. It's time to get into that. Just be emotional. Just let loose. You know, just heart on your sleeve. How are you feeling about an incredible Ravens season coming to an end?
This really stings. Like, I'm happy that I'm coming on here to talk about it. But last night, when I say I sat in my room in the dark, I was so upset. I could have cried myself to sleep. That's how bad.
The purple walls. Is that a Ravens purple reason?
Yes. I had on my Ravens hoodie, everything. I was so happy. We were so freaking close. Like, just stupid mistakes on mistakes. Like, the fumble in the end zone, the interception in the end zone, like, the taunting penalty. The Ravens really just shot themselves in the foot. Like, the defense showed up. So, shout out to, you know, Roquan Smith, Kyle Hamilton. They definitely did their thing, you know, being able to shut out the Chiefs in the second half. Like, they didn't score, but it just sucks that we were right there. I wanted this so bad for Lamar, and they just fell short. So yeah, I'm hurting this morning. This is going to sting for a little while. I've been avoiding my mom and my brother, you know, who are Steelers fans. I haven't seen them yet, but I already know I'm going to get it when I see them. They're going to rub it in my face. So yeah.
Well, Good luck avoiding your family, Rachel. Thank you for your thoughts. I apologize because we're about to trample all over the Ravens. Mark, Rachel touched on it. Zay Flowers with an ultimate scene of a sequence. What with the taunting penalty that was immediately followed out by a cardinal sin reaching the ball across the goal line, which could have even resulted in the horrible touchback rule that, you know, some people think is cool for whatever stupid reason. And then being so upset about the entire sequence that he slammed his helmet down and cut his hand, a person who catches things with his hands for a living. So a really just kind of meltdown of a moment for Zay Flowers, emblematic of what the Ravens went through on
Sunday. Yeah, that was a really tough sequence. I mean, the taunting penalty, I think if he had done just two of the three things, he might have gotten away with it because you had the push, the spin of the ball, and then the flex. Like, if you do two of the three, you're probably not going to get flagged. It's the AFC Championship game. But to hit all three, I think they're, you know, they're probably going to throw the flag in that situation. But then, look, to his credit, he got those yards back because he got hit on the crosser too for like a 14-yard gain. And it wasn't even, I think, that he reached for the goal line so much as Snead just did a great play. Like, he punched it out like peanut punch in a critical moment, like a half yard short of the end zone. I thought Snead deserves a ton of credit for that. But yeah, then you obviously make things worse by spiking the helmet and cutting your hand. If you would have told Rachel on Friday, listen, they're going to hold Mahomes and company to 17. Chiefs aren't going to score in the second half. Like, you would have taken that, I think, in a heartbeat. It's just you couldn't finish drives with points. Like, you had, obviously, the Flowers punch out. You had the most ambitious put it up of the hand moment I think I've ever seen from a receiver. But Isaiah Likely's basically triple covered. He's like, hey, hit me.
Yeah, man, I got it.
I got you. And it was, you know, a cover two look with your linebacker carry. And I kind of, but like, man, to end that drive with an interception, to not come away with points on both of those opportunities, just heartbreaking for Baltimore. And I also wonder, where was the run game? Like, where was the run game from the Baltimore Ravens? It's almost like Monken thought, look, they're gonna want to stop the run. They're gonna expect us to run. So I'm not gonna run. Like, what? What was that?
So I have I'm only half joking when I say this theory. I think we're playing Patrick Mahomes, we gotta match him pass for pass when you don't really have to. Especially when you're the Ravens who led the NFL in rushing. Keep going after that. By the way, Spags, Steve Spagnuolo, and the Chiefs DBs had a phenomenal performance. Just a complete shutting down of what the Ravens wanted to do. The Ravens like to get into bigger personnel, and then they run the ball out of that, and they'll attack downfield. Everything is attacking vertically. They turned all the vertical shots. They turned that water off. So what changed, like, from the Texans game to the Chiefs game for Baltimore, is after the first half of the Texans game, the Ravens found the answers in the quick game. They didn't go to the quick game at all in the second half, which I thought was really disappointing and really confusing for the Ravens, especially because you're going to choose not to run the ball and you're going to choose not to have any quick game in the offense. You're putting a lot of strain on the offense and the quarterback to create everything. You know, like, I think Lamar didn't have a good game. I think there were a lot of times where he was trying to force throws. He was trying to will the ball. He was trying to will somebody open downfield. Like, something's got to happen. Like, it felt like he was getting frustrated. And I thought he could have run the ball a lot more. I think that was something that was kind of surprising. But a lot of credit to Spags and that defense, who continue to find answers. And based on where this defense was in, what, 2020, 2021 even, this is a completely different group. Like, those young DBs that were getting beat downfield in the first half of last year, they're the best position group on this team, and they played phenomenal last night.
You talk about the Chiefs defense. Was it that Titans loss they had in 2021 maybe, where Tyrann Mathieu called the Chiefs fan base toxic. That always has felt like an inflection point for me in terms of when they kind of started to turn a tide. Like, the Chiefs are the ultimate team who takes a weakness seriously. They're like, oh, our offensive line sucks. We're just going to throw a million resources at this. Our defense sucks. We're just going to throw a million resources at this. Although I know they don't have a ton of money invested there. Guys, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to be this person, but like, I'm really disappointed in Lamar. Like, and we can give out criticism and, you know, credit, obviously, to your point, JP, about giving Steve Spagnuolo all the props in the world. But like, this was Lamar's moment. And I just feel like, Mark, he just floundered. And I recognize, like, it was a difficult thing. Like, I want to add that context. But like, I mean, his two MVPs feel so hollow. I mean, assuming he obviously gets it next week, because like, do you look back on those fondly as a Ravens fan and enjoy them? I mean, like, on one hand, the answer is yes. But on another, it's like, man, this is just, you know, it's just really tough to take in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is tough to take. And do you look back on those fondly? You had a 14-2 team that could bounce the division around, and then this team that we were all sort of looking at coming into this postseason as they can make a deep run. They are perhaps the best team in football. Look at what they do on both sides of the ball, and you come up short of the Super Bowl. And to JP's point about the quick game, against Houston, Lamar's average depth of target was like 7.9. It was 9.8 on Sunday. It was almost 2 yards more per attempt. Like, that's a big jump. And you showed you had proof of concept in the second half of that division around game. We can go quick game. We can get opportunities for big plays. We can turn quick throws into chunk plays with yardage after the catch. Where was that? And was Lamar good? No, he wasn't. Like, even when they went quick game, he had a throw to Hill in the right flat where he just missed it. Like, he missed throws too. And whether it was rain, conditions, whatever, I don't know. I've got tiny hands. I know that. It's tough to throw when it's rain, when it's rainy and it's wet out. But also, look, then run the ball more. Right. All the stuff that we thought that they were going to do, they didn't do. It's almost as if, at least from an offensive game plan and script management scenario, they just outthought themselves.
And the funny thing about that quick game throw to Hill that you talk about that Lamar missed, even if Hill catches that, he's getting crap.
It's behind the line of scrimmage.
Not only is it behind the line of scrimmage, Jarius Sneed is right there, because what they did was, and again, Spags is amazing. They played with three safeties. It looks like they're going to play cover. They're going to play two man. And to the backside, there are only two receivers. There's OBJ and Justice Hill, who's in the backfield. They're going to try and get a pick, kind of like a pick route. It's like slant flat. But then Sneed passes off that slant by Beckham and comes off on the Hill. That was a microcosm of the game. Like, there's nothing open downfield, and they just completely had answers for everything. I think, like we said, Lamar did not play good, but I also think there is a lot of – we do – and I use we royally here. We do a lot of, oh, they played good. Quarterback gets all credit. We play bad. Quarterback gets all blame. I don't really like it. Of course, I've said it before, but even in this case, like, Lamar didn't play great. He played bad. I also think the game plan was really, really bad. I wonder what their thought was going into this week, considering what the Bills did in terms of running the ball and like and throwing quick passes and throwing quick game and still ending up losing. I wonder if that kind of affected the game plan that they came in with, because they're like, we can't hide our hand. We can't hold our cards anymore. But that's what you came into the game with. That's what brought you to the dance. That's how you open up the shots downfield by taking in the quick game, by using the run game. Nick Bolton was turning and running on every vertical over route that was run in the second half. On the interception, he was just running with Isaiah Likely. Again, funniest thing of all time, where he's throwing up the mailbox post with three guys on him. Like, Okay, man, like, sure. But it was just a really confusing game plan and really disappointing, because like we talked about, the Chiefs offense didn't score in the second half. I mean, we could even go after the first scripted drive touchdown, the Ravens were locked in. And it is a lot of credit to Mike McDonald, who, if I were a team based in the Washington, D.C. area, I'd look at hiring that guy instead of the other coordinator in Detroit.
I think what you said is fair, JP. I think Zay Flowers is going to take a lot of the heat for the game because he had the most like flagrant moments. I think Lamar is going to take a lot of heat because he's the quarterback, but kind of a really disappointing moment for John Harbaugh, like somebody who had everything so buttoned up, you know, all season long, just couldn't get it done in the 11th hour. Really, really bit of a bummer, or, you know, huge bummer for the Ravens. On the Kansas City side, Mark, who, so the, the Patriots' first three Super Bowl appearances, they beat the Colts in the 03 AFC title game and the Steelers in 04. Is that correct?
I think you flip it. Wait, or maybe not. I can look that up, but something like that.
Okay, because while Mark looks that up, JP, so the Mahomes-Brady thing is like obvious and low-hanging fruit, and like how can you not make that comparison? But something I was thinking about as this game was unfolding is he's won four AFC titles now. They've won four AFC titles, and three of them have come against his direct challengers in terms of people we've tried to kind of equate him to. Now, Joe Burrow got through one time and deserves a lot of credit for that, and the Bengals, we've given them their flowers. But Mahomes has taken out Lamar, obviously, in the AFC title game. He's taken out Josh Allen. He took out Burrow in the rematch. Mark, do you have that list now, by the way?
Yeah, so in 03, they beat the Colts, and then in 04 was the Steelers.
And who was the 01 AFC title game against?
That was Pittsburgh.
Okay, so, I mean, kind of like Brady, JP, I mean, you know, those were the direct challengers to Brady for the AFC throne. And, what I mean, like, I don't have any way to contextualize this that, you know, hasn't been offered, but, like, this is stupid at this point. It's unbelievable what the Chiefs are doing.
They're inevitable, man. Like, it just – it's so wild that – they were able to get through the receivers not being able to catch a pass and still make the Super Bowl with the receivers playing the best game. The Kansas City receiving targets have had the best three-game stretch of the season in the playoffs. That's something that just, like, you kind of got to tip the cap, you know? Like, that was something that we didn't expect going into the season or going into the playoffs. We thought the receivers were going to be a letdown. MVS decided to remember how to catch the ball, which – the last play before they kneeled it out.
That's the funniest thing of all time.
This is gonna be a drop. And MVS comes down with it. Like, that's the biggest point of the game. Travis Kelce dealt with drops a lot during the season. Had, I believe, 11 catches, 116 yards. He played phenomenally. It's just those type of things where this Chiefs team is so complete that the offense can figure out answers throughout the season while the defense keeps them in games and wins them games. And then when it's time for the offense to make the plays that they know they can in the playoffs, they're able to do that. Like, that, this was the most, this was the most Brady-ish of Mahomes, like any of Mahomes' like AFC title games, just in terms of what he did in the first half, in terms of beating the Ravens with his arm and with his mind. It wasn't as much
like the first title game Mahomes was in that they lost to the Patriots.
Yeah, it was very much a
right.
Like, it was so impressive watching him beat everything Mike McDonald threw at him on the first drive, on that scripted drive. And even out of the scripted drives, it was Mahomes beating them every single time with his arm or with his mind, which is really impressive considering, like, this team was a deep shot or nothing offense in 2022. Like, this is something that this is a new version of the Chiefs offense that kind of got started after the Bengals loss in the AFC title game. Like, that's an insane turnaround to go from what they were to being an efficient buzzsaw of an offense.
Mark, in the first half of this game, Travis Kelce passed Jerry Rice for most playoff receptions all time. And not to take anything away from Jerry Rice, but a big reason why he holds all these records is because he played forever and had so many playoff opportunities. And that's where the Chiefs are at now. I mean, they've played a billion postseason games. I mean, you're a fan of a team who had a similar sort of circumstance, obviously, set of circumstances. And now, to JP's point, we're getting new characters, like new members of the party. We're deep into the seasons, and you have, it's still, you know, Turk and JD, but the interns now kind of rolling around with everybody. Like, it's amazing how this continues to thrive. And obviously, there's a lot of people who deserve a lot of credit.
Yeah, it is amazing. I think what's amazing about the Kelce thing is he's done it in nine fewer games, I think, than Rice, which I think is pretty impressive. And I think, sort of to both of your points about the sort of Brady and New England, you know, Mahomes and Kansas City comparison, as you think about how some of those Patriots teams reinvented themselves sometimes over the course of a single season, right? That old Belichick idea of you take the first 4 weeks of the year and you start figuring out what you can do and you lock into that down the stretch. You think about that Patriots team that won Super Bowl 53 that didn't really have like this like precision passing game. So they locked into sort of being a 21 personnel. We're going to run the football. You know, we're going to get behind James Devlin, our fullback. We're going to pound Sony Michel at times. You think about that touchdown drive against the Rams where they ran Hoss wide juke out of 22 personnel like four straight times. It was like, look, this is all we can do right now. And you think about how the Chiefs sort of reinvented themselves these past, say, 12 calendar months from being that deep shot team to now, look, they'll spread the ball around a little bit. They'll do different things offensively. They'll find a way to win. They've given themselves a bigger error band in games where they don't have to be flawless on offense. They don't have to be perfect. What also helps is now you've got the defense to go along with you. You know, you've got the defense that can get the critical stops. You've got the defense that can force the big turnover. Whereas in years past, it was, look, Mahomes, this offense and bust. Now they've got the defense. And if you think it back to the Niners-Chiefs rematch angle, whether it's from Super Bowls 4 years ago or that game last year, now they've got a fun defense along for the ride, which could make it really interesting.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, let's move to the NFC Championship game. And we might as well just, like, dive in. Dan Campbell. So the way I see it, there are four points of discussion, we'll call them. We've got the decision to kick at the end of the first half, just going chronologically here. We've got the fourth and two, the Josh Reynolds drop. We've got the fourth and three, which just was laughable and unfortunate. And then we've got the, we'll put it on Ben Johnson's shoulders, the third and goal run that costed them a timeout, which, you know, the game was kind of over. But still, JP, how do you rank those decisions with one being like, you are stupid, and 10 being you are Albert Einstein?
So I think the decision to run on third on the goal line is at the top.
Right.
Honestly, I think the two fourth down decisions were perfectly fine. And
okay, so then number two for you is the decision to kick at the end of the first half.
Honestly, like, I get most of the fourth down decisions that Dan Campbell made in this game, I completely understand. I guess
if you have to pick one, which one is dumber?
I would have to go with the kick because I'm like, okay, I can understand like going for it there because you're on the goal line. But even in that situation, what benefit do you get from going for it and not getting it? You don't get to pin them back. They had like 10 seconds left in the first half. So you might as well just kick the field goal there. On the two fourth down plays, they're perfectly fine calls. When you are Dan Campbell, you are the go for it guy. This is he's always had that feel and belief. This is not an analytics. This is not the numbers say do this. This is a feel. The Lions offense was moving the ball. Like this, it's not like they were barely like trying to get above water. You know, they were moving the ball. It was perfectly fine to take those chances on fourth down. The first one, if Josh Reynolds catches the ball, we're not having this conversation. Like, it is a perfectly fine, like, just catch the ball. And Josh Reynolds also acknowledged that after the game. I just got to catch the ball. Like, it's perfectly fine to be like, oh, like, the result didn't happen the right way, but the process was perfectly fine there. On the other one, so this one's probably a little more questionable than the first fourth down, but
that's the one that most people are upset with, like are more upset with, I should say.
Yeah, Michael Badgley is not a good kicker from 40, like the high 40s to 50-yard range. He was not that great in that area. I believe he was 50% in the year from that range. So it's not like it was a shoe-in that a 48-yard field goal is going in, you know? And my whole stance on that is defense gets paid too. Like, I think the decision to go empty on fourth down was a mistake because where the Lions beat the Niners were in condensed sets. were in tightening the formation, getting into get they beat the Niners in the phone booth. When you spread out, you play to the speed of the 49ers. That's where they want you to be, because they don't have to defend the run without a nose tackle. You know, they're not really built to stop the run, you know. So I think the decision to go from empty was a poor play design, but also defense gets paid too. Steve Wilks had a great play call, and the Niners just executed better. They covered every single route on mesh. Mesh normally works. Like, if you are on football Twitter a lot, you see mesh rail is undefeated for some people. I am of the belief that mesh rail is not good play. Run a real route concept. But defense gets paid too. Like, they made a great play. Like, you can't be like, oh, this was a bad time to go for it when the kicker isn't that great from that range. And they just got outplayed.
Mark, your thoughts on the Dan Campbell of it all? Because that's all anyone cares to discuss right now.
Yeah. And I'm kind of with JP on how you're stacking these things. I thought the run call late in the game was just inexplicable when you're trying to like conserve the timeouts to then run it. Like, you either score or you've shot yourself completely in the foot. I think the decision to kick at the end of the half, we talked about it in the Slack at the time. Like, we all kind of agreed, like, okay, you're going up three scores here. Like, there's no benefit if you get stopped. Niners get the ball to start the second half. Like, go up three scores. So I kind of get that. You know, the two fourth down calls, this is what got you here. So you're going to be aggressive. Like, I know some have said, at least with the fourth and three, like, look, you got to stop the bleeding here. Like, just take 3 points. Like, it's a risky field goal try, but take the 3 points if you can get it. But to the overarching point on that play, defense gets paid too. Steve Wilks gets paid too. They go empty. They try to get information pre-snap. Goff sees Dre Greenlaw walking outside with Gibbs. He's thinking they're in man coverage. He points to the helmet. They go to the can play, which is mesh. He's thinking he's got man coverage, and they drop into zone. And even mesh sit, which they're running, has a zone beater component with Amon-Ra St. Brown on the sit route. The problem, the entire left side of the offensive line gets blown up. And as St. Brown is sitting over the football looking for it, Goff has to now bail. They beat him. Steve Wilks and company beat him on that play. Like, and to Ben Johnson on that play call, like, he probably gave Goff sort of a zone concept beater, a man concept beater. Goff got baited into thinking it was man. Like, you tip your hat to them. They won. They won on that snap. They won the game. This is, I think the bigger point is, how much do you as a head coach sort of trust your guys, and which guys are you going to put in the key moments to make the play? And Campbell, all season long, has trusted his offense. It would have been sort of against norm to do that at this point, to go in a different direction. And what does that say to your offense at that point in the game to then say, look, we're going to kick? Like, I think he's getting crushed, but it's what got them here. I think you go down swinging.
So first of all, I think we all agree the third and goal decision was really dumb. And I thought Greg Olsen was incredible throughout that entire process.
Oh, like, he was
telegraphing.
Olsen's been fantastic all year. He was fantastic. Like, that fourth and three, like, Olsen talked about it like right in the
he's
moment.
The best.
Like, look, he thought it was mad. Like, Olsen was great.
By the way, Greg Olsen and Kevin Burkhart will join the Blog and the Boys universe this week. So everyone subscribe to our podcast and YouTube channel. We'll see about throwing that podcast on TGI Football. I'll talk to the boss man Michael Kist about that, but so very excited to talk to him. So yeah, I think that's like universally agreed, but it's not as like flagrant in people's minds, the like football average viewer, as the fourth down decisions. This is inside it all the like, you go up three possessions, and I kind of lean that way. I mean, although I lean that way like 51-49, because to your point, JP, about how it is more of a feel thing, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to feel a little bit of fear, just a little bit, in those moments, because it's the freaking NFC Championship game. And I would not feel this way if it weren't for the Cowboys game, honestly. I thought, and we all talked about it then, the end of that became arrogant for Dan Campbell. Like, the insistence on going for the two-point conversion, even when it was it was not increasing their win probability. Like, it defied logic and reason, and it became just like, you know, bull seeing red. And I don't know that this was that, but this felt a little bit too like, well, this is who we are, so we have to be that way. And I don't know that like that's the proper lens to look at this through, although I'm fine if we disagree.
I think we're spending a lot of time talking about some fourth down calls and not the fact that a ball that was supposed to be intercepted went off a Lions player's face mask and into the hands of Brandon Ayuk, or the fact that Jahmyr Gibbs fumbled inside of his own 20. Those are much bigger plays too. Than any of the fourth down plays. Like, if you just hold on to the ball, then none of this is happening.
Mark, the Brandon Ayuk catch was some real Team of Destiny vibes. It was real Jermaine Kearse right before the Malcolm Butler play. Like, it was like, what? Like, how does that even happen? Like, I had just set an underdog fantasy, you know, set up right before then and taken the under on Brandon Ayuk's second half receiving right before that play. And of course, like, it literally instantly died.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And look, lessons there, never run invert two. I don't know, because I mean, that's what the Lions were in on that play. And you're giving Ayuk sort of inside leverage against the corner that's peeling back for a deep half coverage responsibility. But yeah, I mean, that was, and that's kind of what's lost in all of this, is like, there was like that 4 minute sequence, and I wrote about this last night, from like the 7 minute mark of the third quarter to like the 4 minute mark of the third quarter, where like it all just fell to pieces for the Lions. Like, everything that could have gone wrong did. I mean, you have that sequence where you could have, if that's an interception there, I think we're having a much different discussion in this moment, because then we're getting, oh, there's your second Brock Purdy interception. They're trying to do too much. He's trying to do too much. You know, then they go in and score, and then you get the Gibbs fumble, which that play was a disaster from the start, because either Goff opened the wrong way or Gibbs went to the wrong side. It was all just a mess. That's when the wheels sort of came off, and that's when you sort of, and the crowd wasn't really in it until like you get to those moments, and then suddenly the crowd's like back into it, because they're thinking, oh man, we're coming now. And the quicksand was set it in on that Detroit Lions sideline. It was just part of a brutal sequence for Detroit.
And JP, I know you were tweeting about the Jaguars relative to the Lions and like beginning their rebuilds, and you were kind of having some fun with this, but like, it's really hard to not feel for Lions fans, because I think there's a self-preservation that happens when your team is never involved in these moments, and you've kind of lived this throughout your life. And then you get to these moments and you lose them, and it's all of a sudden you're like, I wish this had never happened. Like, I wish we were just like perennial losers. Like, I have to imagine Lions, like, they've when you fly close to the sun, it's either tragic or amazing. And we know how it is for them today.
I think Dan Campbell made a really good point at the end, during his press conference, the discussion that was brought up, and he was like, yeah, I told them in the locker room, it's not guaranteed that we're going to get back here. You know, like he said, this might have been their only shot. He doesn't believe that or doesn't think that, but it's the reality of the NFL. The biggest lie you can tell yourself as a sports fan is, we'll be back next year. As a fan of a team who has said, we'll be back next year, it never happens unless you are Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady. You are never back. Like, you always have to climb that mountain again. It's not like you don't start on third base next season. You know, you're not going to get the, oh, nobody kind of saw us coming thing now. You're going to get everybody's best shot. And
you
now
you got the Packers now. Maybe you got Caleb Williams. Like, now who knows what happens in Minnesota? Yeah, like,
the target's on your back. And I think the Lions are built to do this, but it's not like it's a guarantee that they're going to be back. Like, you're not going to be guaranteed that you're going to be back. That's just football.
Mark, I think the fact
that you get the first place schedule now too.
Right.
Like, I'm just looking at it. Like they get Buffalo next year. They get San Francisco and Dallas next year. Like,
well, Dallas schedule is a lot easily, different now. Mark, no. I think the fact that we talked about both losers first is representative of the fact that like that would have been a much more interesting Super Bowl. But here we are. It's Chiefs. It's Niners. The Niners remain inevitable. But like, this was the like least inevitable they've been. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, it really took Detroit collapsing for them to like take advantage. Like, you know, we've seen the Niners like turn on a dime.
You're right. Like, look at their two wins. You have a win against Green Bay where, look, we talked about it. Like, Brock Purdy didn't play great until like the final, what, 7-8 minutes of that game. Right. He had the throw to Jennings, and then that final drive where he went 6 of 7. You have this game where you're down 24-7 at halftime. And look, I had like three different, you know, Lions win columns like in the drafts ready to go beyond the sort of rematch one. I was like 1,000 words in on Dan Campbell was right all along that I wrote at halftime that I had to scrap again, which gets back to how bitter I am about how that unfolded. But if you're a Niners fan, it's like survive in advance. Yeah, that's great. That's what you did. But these aren't like the most inspiring sort of performances, these two wins that they've had. And, you know, yes, it's to be the only team. I think they're the first team in the like previous 114 or so that were down like 17 points in a conference championship game. They're the first one to come back and win. But the Lions certainly helped you out along the way. And then you get the Love interception. Like, it's not like, man, wow, look at us. We're resilient. We're awesome. It's like, man, we got some help to get here.
I'm going to say that tread very lightly on this conversation because it has become the most toxic thing that I've ever experienced. And I sometimes play online in 2K. Brock Purdy played bad.
As the Heat? Dame Lillard is not on your team then.
Doesn't matter. Brock Purdy played bad in the first half. And then the second half, he played better. Like, that's really it. You know, I think that game was changed when I think something happened in the halftime where it's like, hey, Brock, they're playing man. You can scramble or you can run, you know, because the biggest plays that
he was great. I mean, there's no denying
that. Great in the second half. Like that was they needed an answer against man coverage, surprisingly, which I was like, I don't know if you want to play man, but against the Niners, but. I mean, Brock Purdy decided to scramble, and that was their biggest plays. He added a lot of – I think he added like 10.6 EPA on his scrambles, which is the highest of his career. He doesn't really scramble a lot, but that was a nice added touch and something that, you know, is helpful for your young quarterback to realize in the second half, oh, I can run. But this team is – I really do want to go back and see what happened in the second half for the Niners defense because it felt like the runs that were popping for the Lions in the first half kind of got shut off in the second half. But I also think the Lions got a little too cute. I think they did a little more shotgun drop back, and you don't have to when you were running for 150 yards in the first half. It's just – It's tough to keep this team down for four quarters. You know, it's tough to keep the Niners down.
On the subject of toxicity, I think the Niners fan base is a Super Bowl loss away from just like complete and total infighting over the next few months. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like the frustrations of coming so close over and over and over and over again. And if they lose to Mahomes and the Chiefs again, specifically, like it will really be bad.
I mean, I think it kind of depends on how it would unfold. I mean, if it's just Mahomes lights them up, then I think it's okay.
But if it's Mahomes if lights it's like, them up, then it's like, oh, well, you have to go get a real quarterback. You can't get by with just, you know, Brock Purdy kind of steering. I don't want to call him a game manager because, again, I'm with you, JP. Like, it's a really delicate conversation.
Yeah.
That would highlight the issue like it did the first time.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think you're right. Look, we're going to get 2 weeks of Brock Purdy discourse.
We're going to get two weeks of like Good Morning America style headlines, like people who don't normally cover the NFL that say, Mr. Not So Irrelevant, stuff like that is about to completely and totally overwhelm us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we're going to get that discourse if Mahomes plays really well and Purdy misses a few throws that like, oh, the other guy would make that throw. Why don't you?
I mean, if we get another incompletion like the one that Jimmy Garoppolo had, I mean, if we get a moment like that,
the discourse this offseason has the potential to set in social media on fire from everywhere that we can go with this.
I mean, if you get an overthrow like that. And then you get word out of Minnesota that the Vikings are going in a different direction and Kirk Cousins is available. I mean, there's 4 months of content right there, friends.
There it is. Maybe.
I think it's cool and badass in sports when anybody calls a shot and lives up to it. So the George Kittle, I will be back in this game thing. That is one of the coolest things to ever happen. Like that is, it's funny that it's this exact game, like these exact opponents or these exact two teams. So, kudos to George Kittle. I think that's cool. So, Stats. Our good buddy Stats says, how about the discourse if the Niners win? Stats, it's a family show. So, you know, let's be cool with the F-bomb. if the Niners win, Mark, then the discourse becomes like, I'll look at it through like a Cowboys lens. Like, well, why pay Dak Prescott $60 million a year?
Quarterbacks don't matter.
That's the JP's discourse.
Argument right there. QBs don't matter.
QBs don't matter. We did running backs don't matter for like 5
QBs
years.
QBs don't matter.
I'm getting all the discourse.
Quarterbacks don't matter. Linebackers and running backs do. Look at the Niners.
Exactly. Yep. That's where it's going. You need a good running game and you need good linebackers. Where do you think the Niners won? They won with a good running game and having Deebo Samuel and Fred Warner. Quarterbacks don't matter. That's the discourse if the Niners win.
If the Niners win, Kyle Shanahan is going to be the most arrogant. Not that he's not already in some instances, but like it will be intense.
It'll kind of feel cathartic for him, I bet. Because like,
oh, dude, it will be.
Absolutely,
it will be. Herb Brooks in the movie Miracle, like after he wins, just like shaking like by himself while like everyone is celebrating. Yeah. So, Stats is noting that Brock led 2 comeback wins. Yeah, I mean,
Stats, buddy, you've got 2 weeks. Okay, please pace yourself. I'm a little worried about you right now. You look a little fired up. You got 2 weeks, Stats.
Okay, I mean, like, so we're going to do a show.
In that, if Josh Reynolds doesn't drop that pass, we're not having this conversation. But I'm not getting off of the. I'm not getting off this. QBs don't matter. I'm only half joking when I say it. I'm not even like half joking. I'm like quarter joking at this point.
We will do a Super Bowl preview show that we're going to record that this week. And ahead of time, because I'll be in Las Vegas on Radio Row. Stats will be, so I don't. He might like physically fight me. I mean, I don't know.
Seriously, at this point, man.
Mark, you'll be in New York next Monday.
Yep, I will be.
Do you want to plug anything or no? I mean, like, I don't know how you want to. You know,
I mean, I could say what I'm doing. Williams is set to unveil the FW46, their challenger for the 2024 Formula One season, and they were kind enough to invite me to the launch. So I will be attending a media brunch with James Vowles, Alex Albon, and Logan Sargent, and then a media roundtable with their team principal and the two drivers as well. And I cannot wait to ask Logan Sargent the one question that everybody wants to ask him, which is, what's up with Tua and the Dolphins, man? Because Logan is a huge Miami Dolphins fan, so I'm going to ask him that. But I will be in New York City at Rockefeller Center for that next Monday, and I know you guys are traveling as well. If you guys want to share what you're doing next week, go for it.
I don't even know what you're doing, JP. You didn't share.
I will also be in Vegas for the Super Bowl. I will be going out. I'll be spreading the quarterbacks don't matter discourse in Las Vegas.
Establishing the fun all over the place.
We're establishing the fun all over Las Vegas. I'm excited. This will be the third Radio Row Super Bowl media-ish thing that I've done. So it's really cool that I'm getting the opportunity to do it. And I'm excited to go to Vegas.
Excellent. Well, I'll be there. So, JP, we have to take up an expedition picture, and you'll jump on our radio show on 94.1 San Antonio Sports Star. We will establish the fun. So, Mark, if you had been there, we could have done like a picture, but you had to do this.
Could have done a live show. It would have been great.
You had to do this super like cool thing. The list of espionationers who I've met in person is really small. So, JP, you're about to join that list. So, congratulations to you.
Yes.
So we're going to record next week's Monday Football Monday ahead of time. We're going to can it, as they like to say, which means we'll offer our full out predictions then. But preliminary, you know, before all the discourse completely and totally unfolds, JP, Chiefs or Niners?
Chiefs.
Mark.
I know Stats is watching. I'm sorry, buddy. Chiefs.
Yeah, Stats. I've learned my lesson. I took the Bills. I took the Ravens. Rachel, I'm really sorry. But like, I am not betting against the Chiefs for a very, very, very long time. Even if they lose this game, like, I'm not betting against the Chiefs for a very, 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 very long time. So clean sweep for the Chiefs. Rachel, if you could join us, and I know this is really hard, but offer your preliminary pick, Chiefs or Niners, your thoughts on everything that maybe aren't Ravens related, if you want to avoid that. And of course, crown the MF Double MVP.
I'm also going to go with the Chiefs, as hard as it is. I think they are the better team, so.
Man, you should avoid Stats.
I'm sorry, Stats.
Yeah, JP, we're going to be on a list next week, so watch out for us.
Yeah. My other point, I mean, it is kind of related to the Ravens, but not really. I was a huge, like, Travis Kelce fan until yesterday. I feel like he is a complete villain now. After what I saw, what happened pregame with, like,
Justin Tucker. So explain what happened. We didn't touch on this, please, Rachel.
Okay, so, like, pregame, they showed, like, a clip. Justin Tucker was like stretching, but he was, you know, by the Chiefs players, and Travis Kelce came up to him and pretty much like took his helmet and like, I guess he asked him to move because he was like, you know, Mahomes needs to warm up. And I guess he did not. So he moved the helmet, like completely like threw it out of the way. And Justin Tucker was kind of like smirking like, okay, we're like, this what you gonna do? So that really rubbed me the wrong way. And I feel like he was doing a lot of trash talking like he normally does, taunting stuff, and nobody really caught it. Like none of the refs really said anything. So that to me was a little bit one-sided. And so I used to be a fan of him, but I'm sorry, after this, like, nah, like, I do not like Travis Kelce. I'm sorry. He's nice. A villain. So, yeah. But today,
he's our competition in the podcast games. That's fine with us.
Yeah, for real. But today, I'm going to give the award to Mark. I think you crushed it.
Way to go, Mark. The opposite of Travis Kelce and Rachel's eyes. What do you have to say? Who do you want to thank? And, of course, why is it Logan Sargent?
Well, I want to thank my three dear friends here that make this show so much fun to do every Monday. It really is a blast to get to talk ball with the three of you. I always enjoy it. I want to say one more thing about the Williams thing. I get the most adorably British email from them after I confirmed because they asked me, and I quote, they asked for my, quote, top half clothing size, because apparently I'm going to get some sort of Williams swag. But that's the most adorably British question ever. Like, I absolutely loved it. So I can't wait to see what I get. I hope it's like a cool, they're actually unveiling a new like Puma like kit for the 2024 season. And it looks like in some of the teaser photos, they got like a Williams soccer jersey. Ooh. That would be awesome.
Wow. Okay. I mean, you'll obviously have to Slack it to us as soon as you get it. Was the font that the email came in Times New Roman? This seems like a British thing.
Yeah.
Well, wouldn't
that
be more of an Italian thing? Because it's Times New Roman. In Rome.
JP, you can get the hell out of here. You can kick, right? Like you can I don't know the origins of the font, but it looks British. All right.
But it's Roman. Roman. I know exactly.
I think of Italian, I think like swooping sort of font. Like, you know, yeah. That's yeah, not Times New
Roman.
Roman. There's a lot of things that are named weirdly that don't necessarily make sense. So you again can kick rocks. I'm with stats. You suck. All right. Let's get out of here. As we do, JP, tell us your favorite Italian thing, please.
Times New Roman.